Ladies and gentlemen, the Dana Buckler Show is made possible by all of our amazing Patreon supporters. We have a lot of big things planned in the immediate future, and this is possible because of the support this show receives. So what do you get when you become a supporter? Early access to episodes, past episodes that are no longer available on the main podcast feed, and a number of exclusive episodes. Sign up today by going to patreon.com/howisthismovie. There is a link in this episode's show notes. Once again, we want to say thank you to all of our supporters. You are amazing. Now on with the show.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Dana Buckler Show. My name is Dana, and I'm incredibly pleased to welcome Alex Ponovic to the show. How are you, sir?
Oh, I'm doing great, my friend. How are you?
I'm doing good. Listen, there's a lot I want to talk about, and there's a lot I want to cover. But I think right off the bat, we need to talk about, you know, what's going on in your world right now. I mean, we've got season 4 of Van Helsing has just come out. You've got the new Apple Plus TV show, C. You've got a couple new movies and new projects on the works. So let's talk about Van Helsing first.
Sure.
Season 4 just come out.
Well, season 4 is it's going to come out on Netflix, I think, in February. But we've almost finished the season on Sci-Fi. So we just aired episode 11 on Sci-Fi. Very excited. A lot of fans have been really, really taken to this season. A lot of switches and turns this season, and it's been really exciting to see the fans respond to what we are trying to do for a fourth season. Yeah.
What about the evolution of your character, Julius, in the show? Mm-hmm. I mean, it has been, you know, watching season 1, just watching the development of your character. Did you ever really expect that, you know, your character would evolve? And I'm trying to keep it somewhat spoiler free for those who haven't seen the show, because I really encourage people to jump right on this show. But
right.
The evolution of your character.
Yeah, I never expected it. I was really excited to just be a part of the show and just kind of have this idea of doing the best job that I can, being hired for that, and working with Neil LaBute, who I was a fan of for a long time, and just Chad Oakes and Nomadic Films, who I've worked with before, Simon Berry, who I've worked with in Continuum. So I was just stoked to have the job. And then as the season went on, and I didn't die in season 1, little spoiler, but sure. It's okay. Sure. You've got to know that I'm there. But that was when they started telling me about the character development and which way they wanted to go. And I was absolutely ecstatic. I'm absolutely ecstatic that I've stuck around for 4 years and that they've been writing for me. And it's probably the best project I have ever been involved in. I think it's pushed my career to a different level because of their belief in what I can do. And the family aspect of that show, it'll never be forgotten. I love the show so much.
On my show, over the past year, one of my co-hosts and I, we've been doing a series on the evolution of vampire films, and we've been looking at it, and we were going to end on something different. And I reached out to her and said, you know, I've been watching this Van Helsing show, and they're doing something, I think, really radically different with a bit of the vampire lore. And I urge the listeners, you know, check this show out if you haven't watched it yet. It is incredibly entertaining. It's, listen, I love the fact that it's a TV MA show. It goes places. It goes into some pretty aggressive directions. And I really, absolutely, really like that. And I'm just kind of curious, like, when you know, growing up, what was sort of your take on vampire lore, and now to be part of this, you know, really interesting vampire take?
That's a great question. Growing up with that idea of Dracula and vampire, it was mostly centered around Dracula, right? The growth of that kind of mythology into vampires, and you know, they had, there's some kind of a mysterious, sexy allure to them, and I love the fact that we kind of ventured away from that, and we went, dug right into the pure viciousness of hunger and power within this world, and how they created the look of the vampires. Jennifer Kaminsky did a phenomenal job, especially in the last few years of showing the different types of vampires and demons, and made it really original. So yeah, I was pleasantly surprised at the direction of what the vampires were looking like and being like, and where they stood. And it was one of the things that Neil LaBute and Simon and I talked about, is, you know, when we started talking about Julius in the first season, and their guidance really helped shape a lot of us in how we portray these vampires.
That's excellent. I mean, it's just, I'm just sort of gushing over this show. I absolutely love it. I'm actually going back and watching season one again. I started doing it yesterday, and I was like, I just love it. But you've also got another show that has just debuted on the Apple Plus TV, and it is C with Jason Momoa. Can you talk just a little bit about not only what the show is about, but, you know, your character in general? Because it has an incredibly interesting premise for a show, very unique.
Yeah, it's a phenomenal show. And I've been friends with Jay for like years before when he was on Stargate Atlantis, and rekindled our friendship when he reached out about this role that he wanted me to play in C. And it's an unusual storyline. Like, it's literally 600 years in the future. The Earth has been totally reborn. The greens are greens, the blues are blues. Everything is absolutely stunning and beautiful, but no one on the planet can see. Everyone is blind. And it's not like they lost their sight in 600 years. That's, they found ways to elevate the other senses. And the way they go through the world without sight is really interesting, which led us into blind camp. So we went into blind camp and movement camp, and really tried to kind of suss out, and because it's the first season, kind of give these characters and these different tribes some solid ground to stand on. And so for my character is Weck, and I'm the leader of the slave traders, and which Jason Momoa's character, Bubba Voss, was a part of. And our interaction was, you know, he's trying to save his son and his daughter, who both have sight. And so that is the big crux in the whole thing. The people that are looking to rule the world want the people with the sight. And Jason's character, Bubba Voss, is just trying to save his family, and he wants his family safe. So that's the journey of that. And we just had one of the most phenomenal fight scenes in the show, and great character development just by talking with Francis Lawrence, who I think is probably one of the best directors ever. And willing to create was something that I'll never forget on the show. Him and Jay were, you know, give us your ideas, let's go from there. And then the makeup department just absolutely annihilated this. So it's been quite a show to be a part of.
The production level on this is unlike anything I've seen in a long time. Like, it is something else. And you knew this going into this was going to be Apple Plus TV. This is the newest of the new streaming services, and Apple is throwing their hat into the ring. And this is the world we're living in now, where I think some of the best shows are on streaming services. You know, what were your thoughts going into it, knowing that you were going to be a part of a brand new streaming service right out of the gate?
Well, man, I'm a huge fan of Peaky Blinders, and Stephen Knight was a part of this, and he created this, and I was just over the moon. And not only is the production value next level, the creativity in it is what really makes the production value stand out. And there's some amazing makeup on the show. I was in the chair when we were first experimenting with how we wanted the character to look, like 9 hours the first time. We brought it down to three, but it was everyone in there works very long hours to try to make the show look the way it is. But that just comes from the creative minds and then, you know, the budget allowing us to do that kind of stuff.
When you're working on a show like Van Helsing or on C, when you go into each season, well, we'll talk about Van Helsing. Is your character's arc laid out to you prior to the start of the season, or is it something that you're learning sort of week by week as you're filming?
Yeah, you're learning week by week, and then you're also, you know, you try to get in there with the writers and just go like, what are you guys thinking? Yeah. Yo, what are you guys thinking? And so you just kind of, you get super excited when the next script comes and you see that there's these few moments and couple scenes that it's taken the character to do a different level. So you get to really sit in that and go, how can I make this alive and compelling? Because I've never done this kind of thing in the story. So it's always exciting, and it's always new. So we don't really get it laid out, but it's always exciting when the new script comes.
You know, I was talking to Devin Sawa a couple weeks ago. He was on the show, and we were sort of talking about the differences between feature filmmaking and television production. And I'm always curious, you know, you've got more than 100 acting credits throughout television and movies. You know, what's one of the big differences that you see between doing television work versus feature film work as far as the momentum in TV shows, for example?
Yeah, exactly. The idea of knowing you have a block of time to do a film and you really need to do your homework and you're looking from A to Z. And again, like I just said, in film and television, you don't really know all the scripts. You're having 13 scripts, and with the film, you have one script, so you can really dissect it. And I like the quick pop of doing everything that you can and the troubleshooting, and especially, you know, nothing on the page is ever exactly the way it's going to be like on set. So you're really kind of working and how you can button, oh, okay, this can happen over here in a feature, and it's compelling and it's fast and it's focused. A television series is this growth of developing a character, developing the story. We get so many chances to improve and to make the next episode that much better. So it's the long game. I enjoy it because you get to be in that kind of atmosphere longer, but I also really enjoy, you know, a group of people getting together, putting their heads together, working well together, and making something that you're going, I can't believe we just shot something like this, and it's a life memory. So they're both like, it's almost like, what child do you like the most? You know what I mean?
Sure.
So they both have their advantages for sure.
Can we talk a little bit about Snowpiercer?
Yeah, man, I'm super excited about Snowpiercer. We're shooting the second season right now. I think the first season airs in June. They've been holding off a little bit on TBS, and it's one of those things where you go into the audition and you love the character going in, and then being able to help maneuver and create the character once you've gotten the job. And, you know, Graham Mason and everybody at Snowpiercer have been nothing but beautifully generous with how I was, my vision of the character. And it's a ride. It's pretty great. I mean, when we shot C, everything was outside. We were in the environment. It was cold. It was rainy. When we're shooting Snowpiercer, the whole series is set on a train. So we're indoors the whole time. So that's kind of nice in the winter. But yes, Snowpiercer is going to be something quite special. Did you see the trailer?
I have seen the trailer, and the movie Snowpiercer is one of the most original, fascinating stories that I have seen in a long time. So when I found out that it was going to be turned into a series, and I mean, look, it just looks absolutely amazing, and it's really exciting. You must be just thrilled to be a part of it. Like, it's
so over the moon, especially, you know, that we got this season two without even airing season one, which means, you know, people are having high hopes for it, and I just feel blessed being a part of it. And Jennifer Connelly, one of the smartest actors I've ever worked with. David Diggs. I was a huge fan of Alexander Hamilton, the musical, and he was the original cast member in that. So I kind of fangirled over him for a bit. It was a little embarrassing, but it's just a wonderful show to be a part of.
And you're starting production on a film soon.
Yeah, I start next week on a film called Chained, directed by Titus Heckel, and it's a very interesting story. Adrian Holmes, who's on V Wars, is a part of the film also, and it's a really interesting story about the growth of a boy into a man, and about being abused and bullied, and how a child deals with that. A 13-year-old kid finds me chained up in a warehouse, and then there's this friendship slash a lot of things are happening, and the twists and turns that happen, and it's a psychological crime drama, and I'm really excited to be a part of it, and to be working with such a great team.
Where's the production happening?
It's happening just about 5 hours away from Vancouver in a town called Kelowna, which has been really exciting to be a part of.
That's awesome. And at some point during our discussion, I'd love to just spend a few minutes talking about, you know, the industry in Vancouver, because it is its own entity. I mean, you've got Hollywood and then you've got Vancouver. And I think that, I mean, the level of productions, the quality of productions that come out of that city. And I say that as, you know, a little biased as a Canadian, it's something to be very proud of. And I definitely want to touch on that. But what I'd really like to know right now is I got to know where this journey began. I have to know where it started for you, because from what I understand, like, your first passion, your first love, it was music. I mean, that's what you were doing. Can you just take us back to sort of where you were at, what you were doing, and then how you got made this sort of transition into acting?
Yeah, it's such a, whenever I look back on it, I'm like, I just see how lucky I am. It was one of those things where, you know, the home environment wasn't that great for me. And then, I was in school, which I didn't really excel at. And there's these dudes that I befriended who played music. And so after school, I would go there and just watch them play music. And I was just so enthralled by that type of joy. And then one day, their bass player couldn't do a talent show. And I was asked if I would play bass. You just have to hit that big string a lot, because we were a metal band. Just hit that big string a lot. I was like, I'm in. And I loved the air. I used to do air banding with the guys because I didn't know how to play an instrument. So I started that way, like literally thrown right on stage and fell in love. And then learned to play the instrument. I was part of the band, and those same guys, we toured all over the country of all over Canada, even like the summers of grade 10 and grade 11, we would go on tour and we would play bars, but then they would usher us upstairs into the hotel because we weren't allowed to be in a bar, only on stage. So we started very young, and I just love the aspect of telling stories through music and performing it and making it interesting. I wasn't that great of a player, but I loved entertaining. And so as time went on, during that time, I also was I have three generations of boxers in my family, so I was also boxing during that. And so, not knowing exactly which way to go, but music was quite something that I was falling in love with. But it wasn't. I just wasn't a very good bass player, and it wasn't very good in that way. And then there was this opportunity where a casting director asked me if I wanted to audition for a movie, and I was like, yeah, I'll give it a shot. And I went in and auditioned, ended up getting the gig, and I was just like, oh, this is really interesting. And befriended the stunt coordinator, Rick Skeen, who was, because Winnipeg, my hometown's Winnipeg, it's very small. So they only had one stunt community. And he goes, I don't have anybody big like you or that can fight and that can kind of act. So I was a part of the stunt community there, started to grow, and being on set quite a bit, turned into being a stunt actor, started taking courses. And it was one of those things that just made me really want to be a part of this craft and telling stories, knowing how hard it was. I mean, it was hard being in a band, but this was a different type of, you got to really put your hours in. And I just really fell in love with it. And then I got to the point where I just didn't want to do stunts anymore. I think that's something that there's some really amazing stunt people out there. I don't think I would have been in. I wanted to tell stories. And if that risked not getting a job and not paying rent that month because I wasn't taking a stunt gig that would take me out of acting gigs, I would do it. I would just try to, taking classes, going to New York, LA, just taking workshops with the best in the world. And then I started just slowly booking and then falling short on a bunch of stuff and slowly booking again. And for me, the biggest help was seeing my peers around me doing the same thing I'm doing and us pushing each other. So I developed into the acting aspect of it very late in my life, in my mid-30s. It was something that I absolutely cherish.
Now, in the beginning stages of this, when you sort of make the decision that, you know, it's the stunt work, I really want to do the acting, is this still primarily in Canada, or is there that understanding that eventually I'm going to have to go to Los Angeles, or I mean, where's the decisions there come in?
That's interesting. Because I was from Winnipeg, I made that decision to go to Vancouver. A friend of mine was in Vancouver. I was going to stay there for a couple months, crash with him, and then go to Los Angeles because I did a film, became really great friends with a guy, Victor Webster, and I was going to crash with him and give it a shot, you know. But again, I was a little older than everyone else that was starting out there. And so on my way to Los Angeles, 9/11 happened when I was in Vancouver. And so everything kind of went a little wonky with being able to go to the U.S. and stay there. And the longer I stayed in Vancouver, the more courses I was taking and getting educated in the craft and auditions, and then it's just kind of steamrolled into just working. And then it got to the point where I love being in Vancouver and I would go to Los Angeles for pilot season or for auditions, book some stuff, have a great experience. But coming back to Canada, come back to Vancouver, to me was such a home just because of how the industry grew here. And it was more opportunity. And then it came to the fact that, you know, there wasn't any difference between Los Angeles and Vancouver as in talent wise. We can do the job. And the American production company started really taking stock into, wait a second, we don't have to hire in LA if we're shooting in Vancouver. These roles can be done from people that are right here in front of us. And that's how it kind of grew for me, and it kind of solidified me in the industry.
Well, I think you kind of answered the question I had next, which was when the first time you made the trip to Los Angeles, you know, by this point, you have had some experience in Vancouver. Mm-hmm. You understand how the productions work there. I was curious what your first impressions were of Los Angeles the first time you went there, because it's a world away from Vancouver, as someone who's been to Vancouver. So,
right. It's, my first few experiences, it's the biggest, loneliest city I've been. It was really tough. And it was tough to develop really good friendships. Everyone's there going for a goal and everyone's doing their thing, but the sense of community I didn't find yet. And it was lonely. And even though I had, you know, some good friends, the community wasn't there the way I felt like it was in Vancouver. But the only reason is because I've been in Vancouver for a while, and so I've developed that. I didn't do it there. So especially being in my mid-30s, you know, late 30s, and feeling exiled, basically, and just really trying to crack these moments. So I had a really tough time my first few years, but in that I didn't give up on meeting great people. And then I've now developed like some of the best friendships ever. And I still, whenever I go to Los Angeles, I make sure to see these guys, and they're not all in the film industry, which is great. Just really good humans, but it takes a while to develop that. And so I got pretty lucky with who I saw, and who I became friends with later on. But those first 2 years really tested me. Is this where I want to be? And I'm glad I stick around.
I want to go back to when you mentioned that a casting director asked you to audition for a part. You ended up getting the part. And tell me about the very first professional acting job you did. Tell me about your first day. I mean, are your nerves all over the place? Tell me about that day.
Here's the coolest part of this is that because our band was quite successful and we were touring all over the country, that was my love. That was the thing. Like, if you would have said to me, hey, you guys are going to be backing up Metallica, then I would have been shit my pants.
Sure.
But booking a gig on a movie is like, okay, I'll give this a shot. This is great. And, you know, work and being in a band and everyone's going in one van and you're going to 7-Eleven for noodles because that's the only thing you can afford because you're an original act and you're just going to do your thing. I then, you know, when I booked the role, it was like, oh, cool, this will be fun. And I ended up going wardrobe, makeup. The thing that blew me away right away was they had a massive breakfast table. I was like, I can eat that? Like, that's for me? And as a big dude, I'm like, I got to learn this craft. Because if they have a breakfast table like that, I'm in. But it wasn't this nerves. And that was my first gig. Again, if it was me now, I would be losing my mind. But my first gig with, I was Roddy McDowell's butler. Like, it's Roddy McDowell, Planet of the Apes. Like, to me, that was, at the time, it was cool, but it wasn't what I would feel like now. So I think I got pretty lucky of not being starstruck or being blown away because it was just an experience I wanted to take. But then I really started loving it, seeing the cameras and seeing all the work it took to make a scene, how long it took. It was just super eye-opening that I absorbed that more than I did the actual job of acting. And then as time went on, I was like, oh my God, there's so much here. And then I started getting really excited about it. So I had a little bit of a different introduction.
You mentioned Roddy McDowell and Planet of the Apes, and that's a great way to segue into motion capture performances. And if you could talk a little bit about that, what that experience was like.
Well, man, like, how crazy is that, right? Like, my very first thing is Roddy McDowell, and then I get cast in, you know, something that I grew up watching. And that movie, you know, one of the most iconic scenes with the Statue of Liberty in the background as a kid just blew me away. I didn't know how much I loved movies until that little moment. And so being able to be a part of that franchise, was just mind-blowing. And the idea of, you know, I went through like five auditions until I finally got it, and it was quite a celebration with me and my boys when I got it. Sure. And then we went to Ape Camp, and it was like a month of Ape Camp. And the coolest thing about that was, you would think you're going through the postures of the character that you're going to play, but the first week was all about emotionality and insecurities. We carry around as humans this, you know, blocks and blocks of insecurities and how we deal with them. And Terry Norty, who was the movement trainer, he was just like, we need to just be open, let your gut out. There's no posture in being human. It's literally letting everything go and get rid of all your insecurities. And so it was tough for a lot of people in our circle to really embody that. And then we were allowed to get into the body of a primate. So it was very compelling. And not only that, it helped me with my acting in general, that film, and Terry Norty, Andy Serkis, oh my God, next level. Getting to work with him and his generosity, just absolutely next level.
And what was it like watching the finished product on the screen?
Surreal. Anybody that saw the film that knew me went, I knew that guy was you by your eyes. Okay. And so that's like, I remember the scenes that we were shooting, but how it came out was absolutely surreal to be a part of a project like that. Motion capture wise was kind of the first one to do it in this way, where, you know, it was hard to get, let's say, the wind blowing on the fur. Like, that's a totally something that was next level to them. And they were the first ones to do it. So we were a part of a world that up until that time, no one has ever seen before. So it was an honor to be a part of that.
That's awesome. One of the questions I always want to ask is, it's twofold. What was, in your experience, the most challenging role that you had to prepare for?
I did a film called Personal Effects, directed by David Hollander, with Kathy Bates, Ashton Kutcher, Michelle Pfeiffer. And it was a role that had nothing to do with my size or how I act normally. It was a developmentally challenged man who was accused of killing Ashton Kutcher's sister in the film. And I found, especially with studying with some amazing instructors, Larry Moss being one of them, I wanted to develop a character that I haven't been hired for not my size yet. You know, when you're a 6'5" dude and you go into the audition room, especially when you're starting out, you're a bouncer, you're a thug, you got all of that stuff. And for me, I was just gritting my teeth going, this is so not the stories I want to tell. And it got to a point where doing all those jobs and almost waiting it out for having the experience to have that one role where I get to be, develop something and create something. That was the role that really turned it for me and just made me really proud and excited for the future, that I can tell stories that I want to tell. And I started producing after that and doing roles that I wouldn't normally get cast in. And that kind of led to other roles that I would never normally get cast in. So that to me was a pivotal role and the most proud that I've been in the journey of my career.
What would be the role that you probably had the most fun doing?
The most fun doing, I did a film called Dead Rising. Zach Lipovsky was the director of that. And he just let me play a psychotic dude and put humor into it, put menacing stuff into it. That was one of the most fun roles that I got to play. But I have to say that Adam Stein and Zach Lipinski both directed a film called Freaks that we did a few years ago that has been doing nothing but amazing things in the independent circuit. And it just broke the top 10 on iTunes, like above, you know, the DiCaprio one and Brad Pitt one. What was that one?
Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
That's
the Tarantino film. Yeah, that's a hell of an achievement.
It's a big deal. And I'm so proud of that film. And I can't tell you who I play in that film because the reveal is something I've never done before either. So I really want people to go out there and see Freaks because you won't regret it.
Is there a character that you've played throughout your career that you'd love to revisit, that you'd love to, I want to come back, even if it's been a few years, and explore this character's story a little bit more?
I did a film with Martin Sheen, and Lachlan Monroe called Badge of Honor. And the character didn't play a lot in it, but there was such, I could see the underbelly of how much there was to him. And that's something I would have loved to kind of continue with.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I have to ask you, growing up, what were the movies that inspired you? That's a question I always like to ask. What were your go-to films growing up?
It's so interesting. My go-to film growing up and that I still am in love with is Rocky.
Yeah.
Rocky, to me, anything that moves the emotion in a victorious way is something that I always gravitate towards. Like, and again, like even something like one of my favorite movies of all time, knowing that it's the Christmas season, It's a Wonderful Life. Like that kind of like underdog story, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And those are the ones that really, really hit me to a different core, because there's nothing like watching a film and being that affected by it. So to be a part of a film that affects people, that is a dream come true. When somebody can say either a TV show or a film that I watched it at the right time and you helped me through a difficult time, those are things that just make me that much more hungry to tell stories. So I love that underdog story all the time.
You know, you said you came from three generations of fighters and, mm-hmm. you know, Rocky, of course, being a boxing film. I mean, I have to ask you, you know, when did you get into boxing? I mean, a young age? I mean,
I put on gloves before I can remember. My dad was a fan of teaching me the technique of boxing, not fighting. It was all about the technique, how to not get hit. And play that mind game, that chess game. That was the way I was brought up. It was never an anger thing. It was always, you know, let's see who can outthink the other and who can outreflex the other. I love the idea of this human chess game. But I've been doing it all my life, and it helped me in acting so much. One of my first plays that I did, the first play I ever did was a play called Danny in the Deep Blue Sea, where there was so much range in this. And we were, for opening night, 300 people. My first play, it's just two people on stage for 90 minutes. It's freaking me out a little bit. So you get all the butterflies. And I was like, oh my God, this is exactly what it feels like before a fight. So I just started shadow boxing, talking to myself. I did all the training. It's all inside me. I don't have to think. It's there. Boxing helped me get through those acting moments. So I'm really fortunate that I have that in my life, because I don't think I would have enjoyed the opportunities that I had right off the bat if it wasn't through boxing.
In one of the Rocky films, I think it's Rocky V, which I'm an unabashed huge fan of the entire franchise, Creed,
right.
Creed II, the whole nine. Like, I just love the movies.
Yeah.
He gives a speech to Tommy Gunn when Tommy has his first fight, and Tommy's clearly not winning the fight. And he talks about fear and, you know, how fear will burn you up. And I'm wondering, as a fighter, when you are getting ready to get into the ring, is that a reality? Is there fear, or is it just so you're so prepared, you've trained so much, fear is just not a factor when you get in the boxing ring?
No, it's always a fear. If you don't have fear, you're not gonna perform to your excel. The fear keeps you alert. The tense fear is a totally different thing.
Okay.
Like that's when somebody's like showing it and it's just so tense. There's a fear in your gut of going. I think one of the hardest things to do in that sport, MMA or boxing, is the walk from the dressing room to the ring. Because you're literally walking, everyone's going, and you're seeing where you got to go. There's everything inside you goes, I think I want to turn back. I think I'm just going to sneak at him. You know, like there's that everything, but you're fighting that. And you're breathing and you're realizing breath is super important again with that and with acting. And just the fear keeps you alert. And then once you start the movement in the ring, that's when the fear dissipates. That's when the fear goes away. But it's everything leading up until your feet hit that canvas and that bell rings. Then now you're in your home. Now you're doing it all. Fear can't really stay there. fear is up all the way until the bell rings.
How does that translate into real life for those of us that are going through life and we're afraid to do things, we're afraid to try things, we don't want to show the fear, but like how does you know the analogy of what you just described as far as going walking from the dressing room to the ring, like how can that translate? How can someone listening just take that and understand like we have to go for it?
Yeah, and I think it sits in the palm of preparation. If you know where you're going and you know what you want to do and you're doing the things right, and all of a sudden you're hit with this opportunity, you gotta trust yourself and how it leads into. I mean, this is what I would always say, especially when I started getting nervous before auditions or a really big scene, and I would literally go, "This is just like boxing, except I'm not getting punched in the face, so it's kind of better," you know. And so that's how I go about it. All this fear. At the end of it, I've just learned so much about myself and about my environment. And that always leads to, something better walking through it. Always. You know, if I lose in a fight, I had to have learned something. How could I prepare differently? Or was that all I gave? And that's great. Let's see if I have more. The walking through it is literally just no one's going to punch you in the face at the end of it.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's a brilliant way to look at it. You're right. You're not going to get punched in the face. You know, no matter how much you're scared of something,
exactly.
you're not going to get physically hurt.
So, right. Yeah. It's all the stories that you make up about it.
No,
just walk right through it.
Yeah. No, and I mean, it's something that I've certainly dealt with in my life. There's been
everyone gets it,
and I talk about you know turning things down because you mentally say to yourself, "Why? There's no way I could do it," and then looking back, saying, "You know, I probably could have done it." And it's just interesting the decisions that we make that fear sort of helps or causes us to make.
Right, and especially when you let's say you did say no to something, and then somebody else does it. And they go, "Oh my God, it's awesome." Doesn't mean they weren't scared either.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. But then you see the end result of going, "Oh man, I should have did that." So there's a lot of regret when fear gets in the way, for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. It is about to be 2020. We're about to go into a new decade.
The new 20s.
I mean, this is insane. I always want to ask this question. If you were to sit down with someone who's 18, 19 years old and wants to do what you're doing, wants to be an actor, wants to be a producer, wants to be in the industry, and they haven't done anything yet, but they have that drive, they have that passion, what advice would you give them in basically 2020?
I think the biggest thing is you have to love it. You just have to love it. If it's the film industry, you have to love it. And then realize that it's not about you. Not being cast, you're going to get so many rejections. But if you start thinking that you're a shitty actor or you're not good looking enough and I'm not thin enough, I'm not big enough, you're just going to handcuff yourself and you're not going to get through. And I'm not saying I didn't do it. Those are the things that I did. When I let go of that, when I went, you know, maybe my hair is just a different color. Maybe just, you know, the ensemble I didn't fit in. There's going to be one where you're going to shit the bed on the audition and then book it. There's no rhyme or reason. All you have to concentrate on is doing your work. And when you leave the room, you got to forget about it. It's hard to forget about it, but look at what you learned in the room, where your nervousness was. How can I make that better? It's all about, I think, the advice I'm giving is, fuck it.
Yeah.
Just do the thing that you want to do because you love it. And in that, the moment is what you're going for, not the result. The result, if you keep going for the result, it'll never happen. Just love it, man. Just love it and just fuck it. You know, prepare and fuck it.
I mean, that's just great life advice right there.
Yeah,
I mean,
right.
It really is. It really is. So thank you. Thank you for taking just some time out of your day. I urge the listeners, check out Van Helsing season 4. I think we were talking before we recorded. Season 4 is about to drop on Netflix pretty soon.
Yeah, it should be dropping in February, and we're close to the season finale on Sci-Fi. So really excited. And it's on, first 3 seasons are on Netflix right now.
Absolutely. And if you've been looking for an excuse to sign up for Apple TV Plus, believe me, I've watched it's an incredible show. You're incredible in it. We've got Snowpiercer coming up. We've got the new film. I mean, there's a lot going on with you right now. These are exciting
super
times.
Blessed and super blessed and excited that I get to be a part of it. So yeah.
That's awesome. Well, listen, thank you so much for coming on the show. Absolutely. I'd love to have you back on again sometime.
I'm holding you to that.
Yeah, please do. Please do. All right. And my name is Dana Buckler, and thank you so much for listening.